Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I think they've got to move. If they really want to go get a quarterback, you got to make some type of move because you're a sitting duck. Everybody knows at 12 that if there's a quarterback there and you like one, you got to get to 11. If Arizona really likes a player, if anybody behind Houston Texans make a bold move and go, let's go, you can't sit at 12. You have to at least move to 10 just to get off that spot if you really want a quarterback. So to me, could you play the odds and say no one's going to take one? Sure, you can, but I think it's too risky, especially with all the ammunition they have. Look, you've traded back. You passed up on Wentz. We've talked about this too many times. Use that ammunition now. If you like a quarterback and you believe this is one of the guys and you're literally having that discussion within your building saying, we're going to take Garrett, but we like Trubisky, then you go get Trubisky.
On the eve of the draft, I'm hearing that Myles Garrett and Mitch Trubisky are both still surprisingly in the conversation at number one in Cleveland. The coaches are all in on Garrett, and the front office is giving serious thought to Trubisky, even though he started only 13 games. Ultimately, I think the Browns will take Garrett first and then try to trade up for their fave quarterback. If they come away with their game changer both on offense and defense, everyone in the building will be happy. If they can't get Mitch, I believe they'll consider Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes at number 12.
I would hope that they don't panic, feeling that last year they had a chance to take Carson Wentz. They did not. And I think when Carson Wentz played them last year, their owner was a little bit upset about how Carson Wentz played and said that he wasn't one of their guys, and now they feel pressure to get a quarterback. They can still get a quarterback at 12.
When you're in a rebuilding process and you have to get better across the board at pretty much every position, you got to take what you think is the best football player available. There's no questioning this guy's talent, his athleticism. There is no questioning that. Obviously, like every player that comes out of college, you have things that you have to get better at. I think he's got to get better at countering some of his pass rush moves, but he's so powerful, he just beats guys on the first move, so I don't know how many times he's had to kind of learn that process. If he's the best player you've got rated, that's what you've got to take if you're the Cleveland Browns.
If Cleveland were to change their mind and take a quarterback with 13 starts, in my opinion, fire everybody in the front office, because he's got 13 career starts, and you're going to take the first pick in the NFL draft with a player like that. If you're going to get a quarterback with the first pick, take Deshaun Watson. He's got the track record. He's got the proof. He's played against some of the best defenses in college football. It's there for me in my eyes only.
It becomes really hard to evaluate defensive linemen because half the time they're just running through guys. Like, if you want to criticize a guy like Myles Garrett, well, Myles Garrett, to me, hasn't developed a secondary move. He hasn't had to. He just turns the corner and runs guys over. I look at that, and it's hard to evaluate certain guys.
You got three issues here. First is medical. The doctors make those decisions by and large. The second is drugs. It's changing rapidly over time because we're now gone from a standard where we said anybody that used drugs is off the board to now we want to know, is the guy a habitual user? By the way, people who test positive at the combine overwhelmingly fail in the league. You now get to the situation where you say, is the guy a habitual user? If he's a habitual user, then in my view, we don't want him. Because those kinds of guys, A, can't function very well, and B, are subject to testing. For example, Peppers. Mm-hmm. He's subject to testing now 10 times a month, 12 months a year, on a random basis. If he now has another positive test, he's facing suspension. Now he's off the field. Tony Dungy used to say the most important ability is availability. The guy's not available to you. What good is he?
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Wow, what a day. What an amazing day. What an amazing day to come. Of course, I'm talking about tomorrow, and I'm talking about the NFL draft, day number one. It's been such a long time coming, and depending on the day of the week, honestly, it feels like it just blew by. You know, the Super Bowl just ended, and bang, the draft is tomorrow, but at other times it feels like, man, I've been tired for a long time of talking about Trubisky or Watson or Kaiser, three relatively flawed quarterbacks who might be the number one overall pick. And here it is. It is upon us, and we will indeed get into it a little bit right here on the Extravaganza. A little baseball to talk about, too. If the Tigers stopped hitting it, by the way, Kush, Frank, can you guys check?
I'm not so sure. I'm going to have to check that because that's actually a legitimate question.
24 base hits, I think, is what they had yesterday. Who started that game for the M's?
King Felix, yeah. A lot of people. Yeah, he only went two innings.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And I can't even figure out, was he just getting bashed around, or did the Mariners decide something's wrong with him? If it's the latter, they're keeping quiet about it.
I don't know. I think they found out that when it comes to King Felix's stuff yesterday, he had a diluted sample. So that's it. It was just, you know, there was just no substance to it. It was just plain and clear. And yeah, the Tigers just wailed away. What an unbelievable game yesterday for the Tigers, just lighting up King Felix and putting up 19 on the board. 19-9 was the final question. Is where was their pitching? How are you giving up?
That's the thing. Despite winning a game like that with that much offense, first of all, Zimmerman was just kind of okay because Jordan Zimmerman started for the Tigers. But then the bullpen decided to, it wasn't going to change the outcome of this one. Obviously, he still decided to... I guess half effort and four or five runs were given up late by the bullpen. So those problems apparently will continue.
What? The Tigers bullpen gave up runs?
What? Shocker, right?
Who knew?
Wow. So all kinds of stuff to get into today on the baseball front, on the NFL draft front. And yes, indeed, a little bit on the basketball front as well, as the MVP of the league that so many people expect anyway. Has been knocked out of the playoffs after five games. Russell Westbrook, king of the triple-double, king of the massive point totals, and king of the fourth-quarter collapses. Yes, has indeed collapsed in yet another fourth quarter, and they get knocked out of the NBA's Western Conference playoffs by the Houston Rockets 4-1. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And why not? Because I'll tell you something, everybody has been talking about Russell for long enough. And, you know, guys... Jim and Frank, I have admittedly, I've pointed this out, mm-hmm. I've gone back and forth on Russell Westbrook as the MVP a little bit as the season has gone on, because sometimes I'm just blown away and amazed by what he has done, and I look at his win-loss record when he has a triple-double, which was exemplary during the season. But then I also go back and look at the games where he was the most needed, particularly in these five playoff games, and particularly when it's winning time, as it is sometimes called. The fourth quarter is winning time. And I watch again and again, and I see the same failures again and again from a guy who simply does not know how to play with other guys. It's why I still believe Kevin Durant bailed. Wasn't that he necessarily wanted to leave. It's just that he felt like, this is only going to get worse. The more emboldened he gets into taking more and more shots, the more danger it puts us in, because I can't seem to control him, and nobody can, so I'm just going to go ahead and get out and play someplace else where they share the ball. He chose Golden State, and it looked weak, and I said it was weak, and I said I was extraordinarily disappointed in Kevin Durant when he did so. It was very much like LeBron going to the Heat with Wade and then Bosch joining him. But I will say this, now that a full season plus playoffs for Russell Westbrook and the Thunder are complete, I completely understood and understand why Kevin Durant wanted to get out, because he knew this was going to be the case, as he saw happen last year in the last several years, that in the fourth quarter, when the go-to guy should be your first-team All-NBA guy, one of your top three players in the league, which Kevin Durant was and still remains, in my opinion, when healthy, when he should be the one carrying it, he's having to beg for the ball. Because the 42% shooter, Russell Westbrook, continues to jack up shots. And so many people, now that, this is what it is. It is Russell and the Westbrooks. That's pretty much the starting five and the bench players as well for the Thunder. It's Russell and the Westbrooks. Once again, you see Westbrook come out in the fourth quarter and just start jacking up shots. Not because the shot clock is running down and nobody else is willing to step up. It's early in the shot clock, and it's my shot, and it's going to be a bad shot, and it's probably going to be an off-balance shot, or it's probably going to be too long of a shot. And he's not a very damn good shooter, so why is he still taking those shots? Why is he taking 34 shots yesterday? Why is he taking, what was that fourth quarter number yesterday? I got to find that one. I've been tracking his fourth quarter shooting throughout this postseason to really kind of, you know, lay it out. He had a monster third quarter, and then he comes out in the fourth quarter, and again, just awful. Just absolutely awful. At one point, he was 1 for 10, and I didn't see where it ended up in the fourth quarter alone. For goodness sakes, let's look at it this way as we talk about the league's likely MVP getting knocked out in the first round. Russell Westbrook took more three-pointers than anybody else on his team took shots.
That's mind-boggling when you think about that for a second.
Which, Jim, you're right, and it would be mind-bogglingly understandable. Well, that's kind of a contradiction. It would be mind-boggling still, but acceptable if he was making a bunch of them.
Sure.
If he was 10 for 18, fire away, young man. The league's best three-point shooters make 50%. That's Kyle Korver.
Right.
You know, you get Steph Curry somewhere around 47%, 46%. You know, you're a really good three-point shooter if you're around 42% from three. Russell Westbrook is around 42%, period, from two. And from three, he was 5 for 18. Next highest shot taker for the Thunder was Victor Oladipo, who took 17 overall. And let's think about that for a minute. The more I marvel at his athleticism, the more I think to myself, I could never, ever imagine another superstar wanting to go play with him. And I could never see him winning an NBA championship. Because, first of all, nobody else is going to win. And let me throw this, too. Because I've been listening to the announcers, and I've been reading some of the columnists and so on and so forth. And everybody, wow, what a season for the Allen Iverson, the answer. Allen Iverson. Made a statement about this yesterday and said, we need to appreciate Russell Westbrook's season for what it is. It's a season for the ages, one we should always cherish and remember, blah, blah, blah. He is absolutely the MVP. It's no question. A lot of other guys had great seasons, but only one season like this, blah, blah, blah. And I was always a big Allen Iverson fan to an extent. I was a Sixers fan. That more, wow, it's what a goofy thing. The reason I was an Allen Iverson fan was twofold, and neither one of them had anything to do with Allen Iverson. Number one, I was a Sixers fan from my childhood because right. I was a Dr. J fan. And number two, I was a Georgetown fan because of Patrick Ewing. And Allen Iverson later on went to Georgetown, so I was still like, George, hey, look at that. I love Allen Iverson. So it was very easy for me when he went to the Sixers to say, you know, I'm loving the answer. Although, of course, I despised his you know, the whole practice thing and everything else. I mean, his attitude and his leadership and stuff sometimes left a lot to be desired.
Although so many years later now, the whole practice thing is one of the great coach player comment rants of all time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a meme. It's an audio meme is what it is, and it'll never, ever go out of style.
We're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice. Not the game that I go out there and die for and play every game like it's my last. Not the game. We're talking about practice, man. I mean, how silly is that?
It is an all-timer. There's no doubt about it. And I'm so glad we have that from Allen Iverson. Anyway, back to the point at hand, or the matter at hand. Iverson is, you know, joining the chorus of he's the MVP, MVP, and so on and so forth. And as evidence of that, everybody says, well, what do you expect him to do? How can he not take 34 shots? How could he not take 43 shots in game three? How can he not do all of these things when he doesn't have anybody else who can do anything for him? Because here's the evidence. I'm sure you heard this statistic already. Allen Iverson sat in this five-game series, or Allen Iverson. I'm talking about the answer here, and I mean Russell Westbrook. There is so much similarity in their games, though. That's one of the reasons why this is interesting, you know. But Russell Westbrook sat a grand total of 45 minutes in the five-game series, right? In that 45 minutes that he was out, if I heard Tim Legler correctly this morning on Mike and Mike, in that 45 minutes that he sat collectively, the Thunder were outscored by 58 points. So that's like a game, you know, 48-minute game. Let's just say he sat out a game collectively, and in the game that he was not playing, they lost to the Rockets by 58. That's pretty strong. That's a strong statement to make, okay? But let's break that down a little bit and find out what does that mean. Does that mean the talent around him is so awful they can't score because he's not on the court? Or, which is choice number one, option two is my choice. which is that when he plays in the 42, 43, 44 minutes out of 48 that he does play, he dominates the ball and the offense so one-dimensionally, so extraordinarily, that when he's out, everybody else is looking at one another and going, who's going to take it? Not because they suck. Remember, this roster was good enough to get to the Western Conference Finals last year and have a 3-1 lead on the Warriors with Kevin Durant and Westbrook there and the rest of this roster. Now, Durant is gone, and suddenly the rest of the roster just sucks. I don't buy that. And by the way, they added Taj Gibson, who's an asset. I don't buy that. They don't just suck. I just think they don't know how to play offense without Russell Westbrook there because they don't play any offense when Russell Westbrook is there. They watch the show. They watch the show. He has become so incredibly single-minded in focus and purpose that when he is gone, the other guys are like, how do we run it now? I'm so used to not getting the ball. I'm so used to not running the traditional offense that Coach Donovan has put in because it's pretty much all watching Russell go and improvise. And occasionally he'll improvise so crazy that three guys will go to him and then he'll drop one off to me. And that's when I score. And that's how he gets part of his 10 assists to average his triple-double. And when he's not there, he's not doing his improvisation. And I'm not getting that little dump off. We actually have to run a true offense now without him here. And we're not used to doing it. I submit to you that Russell Westbrook, when he's on the court, dominates the play. And when he's off the court, he dominates the play by his absence. And it leaves those guys unable to run an offense and to be able to play the game in a competitive way, at least in this series in which they are outscored by 58 in those 45 minutes.
And I'll take it a couple steps further in terms of the Thunder in general, that they got problems now. And it to me, it's twofold. I decided to look because how is it exactly going to work out? And, you know, Russell Westbrook gets a ton of money, obviously, and there's going to be some things changing, obviously, with his contract coming up. What I found interesting is, and you mentioned Taj Gibson a minute ago, he's an unrestricted free agent this offseason. They're kind of handcuffed because on the one hand, if you're the Thunder, you have to find a way to get somebody else in there to play with Westbrook, which is going to be tricky because of all the things we said about Westbrook's style these last couple weeks and months on this subject. Not to mention,
the only way you're going to get anybody of any kind of substance there that you would call, you know, a go-to player when Russell Westbrook is out, the only way you're going to do it is if it is somebody who is truly near the end of his career,
right?
In my mind, anyway, who doesn't mind playing that second fiddle role and just kind of taking whatever is left over when Russell is done feeding. You're not going to get another superstar in his prime to say, I want to go play with Russell. Because if Kevin Durant, who is an unselfish player, got sick of trying to, you know, coddle and pacify Russell that he left, what does that tell anybody else? If you want yours, you eat second. Actually, you might eat third or fourth because Russell takes the first, second, third, and third helpings from the trough. Go ahead.
Yeah, and not just that, but you're going to be hamstrung money-wise as well. Here's what I'm talking about. Two players, and Bob, will be like, what? How is this possible? Victor Oladipo made $6.5 million this year. It'll be $21 next year. Steven Adams, $3.1 million. That'll be 22 next year. They only have 11 guys, counting Westbrook, under contract for next year, and yet their payroll still jumps by $15 million to 106. Jumps to 110 if they retain who has a team option, Jeremiah Grant on the bench, and Andre Robertson, who is a restricted free agent. So you're jumping up cash-wise. So in addition to that player you're talking about, that player is also going to have to come mighty cheap to boot. That's going to be very, very tough.
Yeah, that's a great point. So they're in a tough spot. And you know, that's not a destination city either. No disrespect to Oklahoma City, but it's not a destination city. That's not, you know, one of the marquee places that people want to go and live. If you're especially young and in your prime and in your 20s, you know, people want to go live in L.A. or Miami or in Even Chicago or even Cleveland now because of the way the Cavaliers are or whatever the case might be, they aren't often clamoring to go in the middle of
exactly
of Oklahoma and the heartland.
Yeah, and that's what I speculated, and I think I mentioned this to you in the past when the subject has come up. That's something that down the line is gonna bite teams like the Thunder right in the rear end when you lose the Durants, and eventually when you lose the Westbrooks. It's going to be hard to sell to big-time free agents, hey, instead of those Lakers or going down to South Beach, why don't you come out to Oklahoma City? It doesn't roll off the tongue well, among other things.
He got a little feisty in the game, did Russell Westbrook, when he and Patrick Beverley kind of went at it a little bit. There was a little bit of jawing on the court, and then after the game, with Beverley moving on to the Western Conference semifinals and Russell Westbrook moving on to, I don't know, probably take 94 shots in his driveway. They got after it in the post-game press conference as well. Here's Russell Westbrook asked about what he and Patrick Beverley had to say to one another.
Russell, things got a little contentious between you and Patrick Beverley. Can you talk about, kind of what happened there?
Oh, yeah, he was talking about he was first team all defense, but I didn't know what the hell he was talking about because I had 42 at the time.
Chat for me there, Frankie and Jimmy. For those who are going to hear most of that bleeped out, here's what Russell Westbrook said. He said that Patrick Beverley, we good, guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're good.
Yeah, we're okay. Good.
We got you.
Go on.
Thank you. He said that Patrick Beverley was on the court jawing at him about how he's first-team all-defense, and Russell Westbrook said, I don't know what he's talking about because I had 42 at the time, so I don't know where he's coming up with all that S is the word that he said that we had to bleep out there, or we had to dump out of there, I should say. So Patrick Beverley was asked about that when his turn at the podium came up after the game for the victorious Rockets. He was asked, how could you be talking trash about how good you are in defense when Russell had 42? And truthfully, before I listened to this cut earlier today, I'm wondering, yeah, Pat, dude had 42. It's true. Why are you talking mess when he's throwing up 42? But did you know that Patrick Beverley had an answer? Did you know that Patrick Beverley had the perfect answer? Here it is. Well, it should be there. Patrick, hold on a second here. Let's get him. Yeah, here we go. Patrick Beverley.
But now it shocked me because he said, he looked up and said, Noah can guard me. Yeah, I got 40 points. I'm like, that's nice. He took 34 shots to get it. I mean, no, I'm not trying to bash anybody, but I mean, men lie, women lie, but the numbers don't. Collectively as a unit, we've done a great job on them.
Men lie, women lie, but numbers don't. And what a perfect response. And it's true.
Yeah.
42 points. That's spectacular. Took you 34 shots to do it. Hell of a lot of guys in the NBA, if you give them 34 shots, who can put up 40 points? A lot of them. And a lot of them are much, much higher percentage shooters than Russell Westbrook. Again, we talk about this. He is a 31-32% three-point shooter, yet he jacks 18 threes. He's a 42% overall shooter. And yet he takes 34 shots, took 43 shots the other night. And then here's what I see. Headline, SBNation.com. Here's how badly Rockets destroyed Thunder with Russell Westbrook on the bench. Westbrook said the subheadline. Westbrook sat for 46 minutes in the series. When he did, Rockets outscored his teammates by 58 points. In other words, look how terrible the Thunder are. Russell Westbrook has no help. Russell Westbrook has no decent teammates at all. The Thunder are outscored by 51.3 points per 100 possessions while Westbrook watched from the bench for a total of 46 minutes during the series. How awful. Man, this guy has had to carry a load. I'll tell you what. Russell Westbrook is so good. Imagine what he had to deal with. It must be hard for him to even sit near those guys in the locker room, to sit near them on the bench and watch them, to sit near them on the plane. It must be terrible because he's carrying their sorry collective butts, and they are awful without him. That's the storyline. And I'm tired of that storyline. How about when Russell Westbrook goes to the bench, the Thunder are clueless as to what to do because he does not include them when he's on the floor. And when he leaves, they're looking for Lord knows what. I'm sorry. I'm just really, really over the, he has no help. He's a one man show, et cetera, et cetera. He's, you know, he's the hero, by the way. Kevin Durant bailed on him. He's the hero because he stayed. And, you know, the Thunder took a giant step backwards, but not through no fault of his. It's through the fault of Kevin Durant. No, I'm sorry. I'm revisiting that narrative now. And I understand Kevin Durant's decision.
Not only
I still wish you would have picked somewhere else to go rather than the team that beat them, yeah. Because, again, it looks like you're just climbing onto an already championship-caliber team. But I understand his reasoning for wanting to part ways, and I firmly believe, I can say this with conviction, I believe that Russell Westbrook is the happiest man alive because that Kevin Durant left. Because now he doesn't have to take 20 shots a game. He can take his 30 or 34 shots a game and play the I don't have any help card. But look at my numbers now. And that's what he wanted. I think he's probably the happiest he's ever been playing in the NBA. More happier than when they went to the finals, happier than when they went to the Western Conference Finals last year against the Warriors and took a 3-1 lead. He's happier now because he is the alpha male. He is in charge, and he is large, and Kevin Durant is off someplace else. Russell Westbrook is happy, and to me, I don't want that kind of superstar. Go ahead.
And the only thing is with that argument, because I've heard that too. Oh, and remember, you know, Durant left, and Westbrook was loyally saying, yeah, he did sign a small contract extension, which only goes through one more year, and then you're in player option mode. And ask LeBron James what he does with player options.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's exactly right.
So conceivably,
we know what that means.
So there's a possibility next season might be it for Westbrook at OKC. That's possible.
It might be. But again, Jim, where's he going to go that's going to be any better situation?
True.
He's not going to go to a team that's a contender because the team that's already a contender probably already has stars. They're going to be telling their GM, don't you dare bring that shot pig over here to our roster. I'm not giving up everything that I do and we do so this guy can play his Tasmanian Devil 1-5 type of game.
And even though that may mess up rosters and chemistry, they're not a contender, so this is where the Lakers come in, anyway.
Possibly. But I don't know if Magic Johnson would want that. Magic's calling the shots there now, and Luke Walton is the coach.
That's a different X factor. If it was still the buses doing it, then there's almost no question it would be Westbrook would be their prime candidate next summer.
Yeah,
but now I'm not so sure. I don't know how Magic Johnson's going to want to do that.
You're right. If the bus is called in the shots, that would be the case, but now it's Magic, and I don't think that's the kind of thing that he would want. I really, really don't. I don't think that's the kind of thing Luke Walton would want. Luke, of course, learned under what? Steve Kerr, Steve Kerr. And it's a balanced, shared approach there, we know. And that's the model that they're going to try to build in the world. There is no balance. There is no sharing when you're talking about Russell Westbrook. So you know where he'll go. He may leave Oklahoma City, but it will be for another city that is completely marginal in terms of NBA draw. Mm-hmm. If you understand my, you know, it won't be a contender and it won't be a team that's on the cusp. It'll be somebody who is begging for attention. It'll be in Orlando. It'll be in, I won't say Milwaukee because they got the freak.
Phoenix?
A Phoenix potentially. There you go. It's going to be somebody that is begging for attention and money and ticket sales, et cetera, because he'll do great at those things. But he will not be the piece, the missing piece that brings somebody a championship. It just won't happen. If Carmelo Anthony got traded, which, of course, Phil Jackson wants to do. I could see him maybe going to the big show there with the Knicks because the Knicks obviously like that idea. They do, but they don't because Carmelo and Russell Westbrook are very similar in that regard. You know, Carmelo Anthony's not a guy who really wants to play well with others and win a championship. He just wants to get his stats, live in the city that he loves, and call it a day. So maybe it wouldn't, but I'm just trying to think of a team that isn't close, but that would love the superstar factor that Russell Westbrook brings. And that's exactly, he'd be leaving one place like that, Oklahoma City, for another.
That's an interesting theory. We'll have to watch how it develops.
All right, we have ton of stuff to get to today. Outside of that, again, we're going to talk a little baseball. We got that coming up. Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, by the way, Dari Noka is co-host of Dari and Mel Saturday mornings right here on The Ticket. And, he's going to be hosting the ESPN radio draft coverage. Starting tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, and we're gonna chat with him coming up at about 4:40 today as we take a look at some mock drafts, et cetera. Everybody's got their mock drafts out. We'll kind of get a feel for what you think is going to happen. Word today is that the Cleveland Browns are talking to no less than three teams in the top eight. three teams in the top eight about swapping spots with them and their number 12, moving up from 12 to whichever spot it might be, 5, 6, 7, 8, to make sure that they can get Myles Garrett with their first pick and their quarterback with the second, with their second pick. So that's what some of the talk is. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I'm also not sure I feel the same way they do about Mitch Trubisky as being the number one quarterback in this draft. I'm kind of more of a leaning toward Watson right now, but that's just kind of where I sit. All right, we'll come back and talk more about that after we take a timeout here and get a Sports Center. And on the way to the timeout, how would you like to go and see Sammy Hagar? If you are a rocker, you love it, and it's going to be Sammy Hagar is doing a show on September 24th at the Toledo Zoo. So a little late summer action at the zoo with Sammy Hagar. Tickets go on sale this Saturday, but I have got Beat the Box Office office tickets for you right now. If you'd like to go see Sammy Hagar in September at the zoo, be callers. Are you ready for this? 4, 5, and 6. 4, 5, and 6. I'll give you a pair each because I've got three pairs sitting here, and I'll give one to each of the callers who are 4, 5, and 6. Just dial 866-240-1065 right now. Callers 4, 5, and 6. You'll be going to see Sammy Hagar, courtesy of your friends here at ESPN 106.5. The ticket.
The extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5. The ticket.
Indeed. Rolling onward, 3:48. Thanks for being with us. 866-240-1065. Let's take a couple of phone calls here. I want to get into a few other things, but Russell Westbrook and the MVP are on their way out of the Eastern or the Western Conference playoffs. As a matter of fact, they're not on their way. They are out now as James Harden and the Rockets finished them off in five relatively quick ones last night. John in Perrysburg wants to talk about Russell the Tasmanian Devil. Hey, John, go ahead.
Yeah, I think Russell Westbrook is more like Michael Jordan his first few years in Chicago. He's trying to do everything, and it's just not enough. He needs like a mini-me, like Scottie Pippen or somebody to come in, someone that he can trust and pick up his game. I think that's what he's looking for.
I could not possibly disagree with you more, and here's why. I say that with respect, not out of anger. Here's why. What Michael Jordan did in his first few years before Scottie Pippen got there, he kind of did so out of necessity because, as you point out, he didn't have that other scorer. He didn't have that other guy. Russell Westbrook is that in reverse. He had another guy. As a matter of fact, the problem with that is he was the Pippen to Kevin Durant's Jordan. Kevin Durant was the superstar. Kevin Durant is the top three player. Kevin Durant is the MVP, et cetera, et cetera. And he didn't like being the Pippen. He kicked the other guy out so that he could do his thing, whereas Michael Jordan just simply waited until Scottie Pippen got there and then said, okay, now I don't have to do as much. I can defer to this secondary scorer. This other, by the way, Scottie Pippen also happens to be top 50 players of all time when the NBA made that, you know, they're all, 75-year team or whatever it was. So
yeah.
Russell Westbrook had that guy. He didn't like having that guy. He likes being his own guy. Michael Jordan, I think, was his own guy until he didn't have to be anymore. And then, bang, here comes Scottie, and you saw Michael Jordan just do spectacular things and defer to Scottie Pippen and won championships.
You know what? I agree with you. That is exactly what he did. I think he wants to be Jordan, and he wants to have that mini-me and stuff. And
right.
I think that's
he doesn't like the Pippen role. He wants the Jordan role, and so he's got the Jordan role now. And the question now becomes, who would be willing to come in and play the Pippen role for him? You know what I mean? In today's NBA where, you know, superstars are pooling together, what's odd about it, John, you know, when LeBron went to Miami, for example, to play with Wade and Bosh, all three of them sacrificed somewhat to defer to the other guys, knowing that's what it's going to take to win championships, especially Wade, because he was still in his prime at the time in 2010, and it was his town. He had already won a championship with Shaq as the man, but he was willing to step aside a little bit and let LeBron be the man and yet be one of the three amigos. Same thing now. Same thing happened, I think, also when Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett went to Boston to join Paul Pierce. They all gave up a little bit. Durant goes to Golden State. And what did Steph Curry and Klay Thompson do? They deferred and said, we'll all give up a little bit because we know it takes the group to do this. I haven't seen anything in Russell Westbrook's game or his mindset or his interviews, et cetera, that suggest he would be willing to form a super team, if you will, a big three or even a partnership in which he gives up a little bit to the other guys, like they did in the examples I just gave. He wants his, and I think he's very, very happy that he's getting his and nobody else. He doesn't have to worry about getting anybody else theirs.
You're right. Nobody in the NBA is going to want to come in and try to be second fiddle to him. I think the only way that Westbrook gets lucky is if they find somebody in a small school in the middle of nowhere like Scottie was and draft him and build him up from there.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And then you'd get him for however long he is on his first contract and then decide whether you can keep or not based on you can give him more on a max deal if it happens to be that kind of a player. You're right. But you know what? That's a long road to hoe right there. That's going to take a while to get the right guy to draft him and have him to be that good, you know, generally speaking. And how old is Russell Westbrook anyways? Anybody know? I'm not even sure how old Russell Westbrook is. I want to
say 26, isn't he?
I was going to say late 20s. I was going to say a little older, maybe 28. And I only say that because he was with Durant for 9 years, which would make this his 10th year in the league. Did he come
in? Yeah, he's 28.
28. That's okay. I thought I was close to that. So let's say you do get the right draft pick, which is, of course, is hit and miss in the NBA because you have a lottery. Who knows how high you're going to be able to draft and whether you get that guy. And now that they're in no man's land, they're in that, you know, they're in that hell, if you will, that purgatory where you're not a true contender for the championship, but you don't stink enough to be in the lottery. You just crept into the playoffs in the 6, 7, or 8 spot. You lose in the first round, and you're not going to get a lottery pick. So. But even if they did, was my point here, find the right guy, get the right guy, have him be the right kind of mindset and the right kind of talent and the right kind of complement to Russell Westbrook, by the time he becomes what he needs to become, Russell's going to be 31, 32, 33, and start to get into that age where so many other guys who played with extraordinary amounts of energy in their 20s start to slow down a little bit.
You're right. The only way that he's ever going to get to where he wants to be is if he learns how to humble himself.
Bingo.
And then starts taking less.
And that's exactly what I was trying to say. And that's what great players have done. And that's, again, what Wade has done and what, you know, even Curry and other guys have done. Hey, you know what? Curry said, we just lost to LeBron and to Kyrie and to Kevin Love. We had a 3-1 lead. This is embarrassing. If KD wants to come here, you're damn right, I'll give up shots. I will give up shots. I will defer. He even told, when they were recruiting Durant, he told them, he said, there's no ego here. We saw some of those interviews publicly. There's no ego here. Nobody needs to be the man. Nobody needs to have the most shots. You come here, and we'll do what's got to be done. And you know what? You saw the results when Durant was healthy and playing with them this year. They're easily the best team in the NBA.
Well, it's just like Michael learning to pass to Paxton and Steve.
Trusting his guys. That is exactly right. And not just early in games. Not just early in games where you can pad your triple-double stats by getting 10 assists in the first half and then take over in the fourth quarter and take 21 shots in the fourth. He would give the ball to his guys when it was kind of like LeBron. I give LeBron credit in this regard. He finds the right basketball play to be made with the crunch in the crunch time part of the game. And that's what Michael did. And I can't see Russell Westbrook deferring to Victor Oladipo or to Robertson or to Doug McDermott or anybody else with a game on the line. He's taking that shot. And, again, we've pointed out his shooting percentages kind of dictate that he shouldn't be.
Right.
All right. Hey, John, thanks for the call, my friend. I appreciate it. 866-240-1065. Yeah, I mean, talent-wise, yeah. Russell Westbrook might be one of the most talented guys to come along since Michael Jordan. I mean, the triple-double average speaks for itself, talent-wise. But mindset-wise, like I said, I could not disagree more. Michael was waiting for somebody to come along and help him. And when Pippen did, it was title time because he was absolutely willing to share the ball and defer to other guys. That is something that Michael was able to do. And, you know, here's the other thing. Russell Westbrook is a 42-43% guy. He shot 42-42.5% when both Durant and James Harden, two other great players and scorers, were with him at Oklahoma City. He shot 42-43% when Durant was there after Harden left. And he shot 42-43% this year when he was the only alpha male there. Compare that to Jordan. Like John just made that comparison. Here's Jordan. In his first few years in the league, when he did not have Pippen and did not have that help, 51%, 45%, 48%, 53%. This is field goal shooting. 53%, 52%, 53%, 51%, 49%. His worst year in 94, 95, down at 41%. Was that the beginning of the end? No, because in 95, 96, it jumped back up to 50%, 48%, 46%. Then his last 2 years, which are kind of throwaway years with Washington, 41% and 44%. But Michael Jordan was averaging 37, 35, 32, 33, 31, 30, 32 points a game on 50% shooting most of those years. So even if he did want to keep shooting more than everybody else and not defer, the comparison to Westbrook, I think, is a flawed one because Westbrook isn't that good of a shooter. He's just not. He's a volume shooter. Like Patrick Beverly said, you had 40? Hey, congratulations. Took you 34 shots to do it. How great are you really doing? Yeah, you're sure torching me. Took you 34 shots to do it.
But now it shocked me because he said he looked up and said, no, it can guard me. I got 40 points. I'm like, that's nice. He took 34 shots to get it. I mean, no, I'm not trying to.
Beverly, I can't show you this because we're doing radio, but Beverly's face on that is hilarious because he's looking down at the podium. He says his line there, you took you 34, and you just looked down and paused, just like all humble. Just like I'm making a statement of fact here. You know, dude, just it took you 34 shots there. And the way he looks down just makes it look so embarrassing, like I just punked this guy. I told him the truth here, and there's no comeback for that. Yeah, you had 40 points. It took you 34 shots to do it. Troy and Bowling Green's got some thoughts on Westbrook before we get our top of the hour timeout. Hey, Jork, Troy, go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, good afternoon.
What's up?
Hey, I don't disagree with you much. But I think that Westbrook just doesn't have people going to make shots. He went down the lane a couple times the other night. The one I'm thinking of, he fished to Roberts, I think, and he kind of handed off to the other big guy, and they botched the layup. He has very little confidence in anyone to take those shots. And the difference between
but the question is why? Because, I pointed this out after game four. Was it game four that he had 43 shots, or was that three? I think it was game four where he was 4 for 18 in the fourth quarter. And his teammates, Steven Adams was 8 for 10. Victor Oladipo was 7 for 10. Combined, that's 15 for 20 from your two other primary offensive guys there. That's 75% shot making. Meanwhile, you're taking 40 shots at a 40% clip. I think if you give the ball to those other guys more, we have a better, if I'm on that team, we have a better chance of making baskets and having productive offensive trips down the floor if you're not shooting that often with your 40% clip and giving the ball to guys who are at a 75% clip combined. Don't you think you'd want to get them the ball more?
Well, I think that, but also I think their shooting percentage is up as for the fact that the quality of shots that he gets them based on the attention that he gets.
I would not disagree with that. See, but let's follow through there, okay? I don't disagree. They got better shots because of the attention and the defense that he draws to him. So, if they're 8 for 10 on those quality shots and 7 for 10 on those quality shots that you're getting for them in quarters 1 through 3, why do you stop getting them those quality looks in quarter 4 and taking 18 fourth quarter shots? You stopped letting them shoot. You took all of the shots yourself. That's exactly the problem.
I don't disagree that there's some questionable shots that go up, but also he plays with some speed and some passion and aggressiveness all over the floor that if it was all about him, I don't think you'd see him be as aggressive on the rebounding end of it. He does a lot more than
well. If your goal, though, my friend Troy, if your goal is triple doubles and that's what you want your name associated with, which he pretty much made it clear this year that he was, yeah, you will. You're going to play that game, going all over the floor, looking, trying to chase down every loose ball off the rim and get a rebound for it, et cetera, to get those numbers. And yeah, it probably does create a little fatigue in the fourth quarter, and that's your decision. And again, if you are fatigued in the fourth quarter for playing that way for the first three quarters, another reason to defer to the guys that you were getting great shots before and allow them to make those shots at a high clip by putting them in position. But he's coming down, and he's not even waiting until the offense is run. He's coming down in those fourth quarters. Look at yesterday's game. He's taking wild out-of-control threes and fall-away twos and all of this stuff early in the shot clock, not even looking for anybody else to see if we can get a better look the way he might have done in the first quarter. And that, to me, is why they're a first-round exit and a pretty doggone easy one.
And I don't disagree with some of the things you're saying. I think that just his motor's good, some of the variables of Kevin Durant leaving, some of that's out of his control. First of all, you're in Oklahoma. Whether somebody else ever comes there and plays with him or not, again, you're in Oklahoma. You know, it may not be, it's not like you're studying in L.A. If he's studying in L.A., I guarantee you there's more than one person that's going to go play with him.
And as long as they're complimentary players, you're right. But there's no other alpha males who are going to go play with him because they know they're not going to be able to get to eat. He's going to get the first bite at every bone, and you're not going to get yours because that's what, again, that's how he played it with Kevin Durant. Complimentary players, would they come to L.A. to play with him? Yep. Absolutely. So Oklahoma's a factor. You're right there. And Troy, I got to run. Thanks, brother. I just realized how far I blew past the top of the hour. But you're 100% right. Oklahoma's a factor. But Oklahoma's a factor, and also the way he plays the game is a factor as well. Hey, congratulations to the Sammy Hagar ticket winners, Sue Jankowski of Toledo, Gary Britton of Perrysburg, and Travis Martin of Bowling Green. I like that. We spread the love all over Northwest Ohio there. That's outstanding. How about if I spread some more love your way? How would you like to go and see the Walleye. See, I got so much stuff for you. I got Mud Hens tickets. I got Walleye tickets. How about the semifinals? Walleye and Fort Wayne on Friday at the Huntington Center. I've got a pair of tickets for two people right now. That means a pair for each of you, I should say. If you are callers 4 or 5, right now to 866-240-1065, 4 and 5, we'll send you to the Huntington Center to watch the Walleye and Fort Wayne on Friday in the semifinals. Good luck to you from ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I think they've got to move. If they really want to go get a quarterback, you got to make some type of move because you're a sitting duck. Everybody knows at 12 that if there's a quarterback there and you like one, you've got to get to 11. If Arizona really likes a player, if anybody behind Houston Texans make a bold move and go, let's go, you can't sit at 12. You have to at least move to 10 just to get off that spot if you really want a quarterback. So to me, could you play the odds and say no one's going to take one? Sure, you can, but I think it's too risky, especially with all the ammunition they have. Look, you've traded back. You passed up on Wentz. We've talked about this too many times. Use that ammunition now. If you like a quarterback and you believe this is one of the guys and you're literally having that discussion within your building saying, we're going to take Garrett, but we like Trubisky, then you go get Trubisky.
On the eve of the draft, I'm hearing that Myles Garrett and Mitch Trubisky are both still surprisingly in the conversation at number one in Cleveland. The coaches are all in on Garrett, and the front office is giving serious thought to Trubisky, even though he started only 13 games. Ultimately, I think the Browns will take Garrett first and then try to trade up for their fave quarterback. If they come away with their game changer both on offense and defense, everyone in the building will be happy. If they can't get Mitch, I believe they'll consider Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes at number 12.
I would hope that they don't panic, feeling that last year they had a chance to take Carson Wentz. They did not. And I think when Carson Wentz played them last year, their owner was a little bit upset about how Carson Wentz played and said that he wasn't one of their guys, and now they feel pressure to get a quarterback. They can still get a quarterback at 12.
When you're in a rebuilding process and you have to get better across the board at pretty much every position, you got to take what you think is the best football player available. There's no questioning this guy's talent, his athleticism. There is no questioning that. Obviously, like every player that comes out of college, you have things that you have to get better at. I think he's got to get better at countering some of his pass rush moves, but he's so powerful. He just beats guys on the first move, so I don't know how many times he's had to kind of learn that process. If he's the best player you've got rated, that's what you've got to take if you're the Cleveland Browns.
If Cleveland were to change their mind and take a quarterback with 13 starts, in my opinion, fire everybody in the front office because he's got 13 career starts. And you're going to take the first pick in the NFL draft with a player like that. If you're going to get a quarterback with the first pick, take Deshaun Watson. He's got the track record. He's got the proof. He's played against some of the best defenses in college football. It's there for me in my eyes only.
It becomes really hard to evaluate defensive linemen because half the time they're just running through guys. Like, if you want to criticize a guy like Myles Garrett, well, Myles Garrett, to me, hasn't developed a secondary move. He hasn't had to. He just turns the corner and runs guys over. I look at that, and it's hard to evaluate certain guys.
You got three issues here. First is medical. The doctors make those decisions by and large. The second is drugs. It's changing rapidly over time because we're now gone from a standard where we said anybody that used drugs is off the board to now we want to know is the guy a habitual user. By the way, people who test positive at the combine overwhelmingly fail in the league. You now get to the situation where you say, is the guy a habitual user? If he's a habitual user, then in my view, We don't want them because those kinds of guys, A, can't function very well, and B, are subject to testing. For example, Peppers. Mm-hmm. He's subject to testing now 10 times a month, 12 months a year, in, on a random basis. If he now has another positive test, he's facing suspension. Now he's off the field. Tony Dungy used to say the most important ability is availability. The guy's not available to you. What good is he?
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. It's 4:16. Thanks so much for being with us. Coming up in about, shall I say, 25? Yeah, we'll go about 25 minutes. Coming up, we're going to talk to Dari Noka, co-host of Dari and Mel Saturday mornings right here on The Ticket, hosting the ESPN Radio draft coverage of the NFL draft that starts tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. We'll have that for you. He will talk with Jim Cushlin coming up in about 25 minutes. Hey, have you entered our ugliest drive contest yet at our website? Seriously, if you've got that one of those driveways where the cracks have cracks, you know what I mean? Where it's all uneven, your kid can't even practice his dribbling out in the driveway because the ball's going into the neighbor's yard every time it hits something. If you've got one of those driveways, seriously, head on over to the website, 1065theticket.com, and upload a picture of your ugly driveway because ESPN 1065 The Ticket and Buck Brothers has a chance for you to win a new driveway for your home. All you got to do is enter that or upload that driveway and enter the contest by May 14th at midnight, and you could win the brand new driveway for your home from Buck Brothers and Toledo's sports leader, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. There you go. Hey, I want to stay on the NFL theme for just a moment as we begin this segment to talk a little bit about the draft, but not necessarily just about the draft. Here's the story. Soon-to-be Hall of Famer, Hall of Famer in waiting, Browns Pro Bowl left tackle Joe Thomas is doing some talking. He's talking about head injuries, and he's talking about, you know, the same thing that so many others talk about when you refer to the National Football League and player health and safety. We know, remember, we talked about this a couple of days ago. As a matter of fact, once again, Chris Borland, the young linebacker for the 49ers, who retired after one season in the league because he just didn't feel safe. He just decided, I don't want to put my future mental health, my brain health, on the line here for a few years of playing football, as much as he loved the game, et cetera. And there's other players who have said similar things that, you know, it's just too risky. Who was the former tight end for the Browns and the Dolphins who just retired a couple of weeks ago? Well, maybe about a month ago now. Jordan Cameron. Thank you, Frank Gargano. Jordan Cameron retired, and he had a history, though, because he had, I think, four concussions, and it was after this fourth one, I want to say, that he said, I just can't really take this risk any longer. But what he said on the way out the door was very interesting. He said, it's not just about me not being willing or able to take the risk. He said, I don't like it. He said, there are a lot of guys who don't like this game. It's not fun to play football, he essentially said. As much as so many people who play football at the high school level would think, you know, my dream is to go to the pros, it's not fun when you're there, he said, because of the contact and because of the danger. Well, Joe Thomas, the Pro Bowl left tackle and, again, future Hall of Famer, said in an interview released earlier today that he is already experiencing memory loss. Now, he's, what, 32 years old? Joe Thomas? I think he's 32 years old. And he's saying he's already experiencing memory loss. Does that mean he's got Alzheimer's and he can't do anything? No. But here's what he said. Quote, I definitely expect memory loss. I'm already seeing memory loss. And maybe that's because of my old age, or maybe it's football. It's hard to tell. I mean, there's no double-blind studies, he said, when it comes to people's life. It's just a part, I think, of sometimes getting older, and it's hard to tell if it's because of football or because you're 32 and you're not 21 anymore, and you just have a lot of stuff going on in your life. Well, what kind of memory loss are we talking about, he was asked. He said, short-term memory loss, hard times remembering, like things that have happened recently, like you walk to the grocery store and you're like, huh, I can't remember what I needed to get. Just little stuff like that. And I think that if you let it really bug you, I think it can make you depressed and feel sad, like, wow, I don't have the memory I used to have. But, you know, I try to be relatively good-natured about it at this point. End quote. Now, let me interrupt the story there by saying, on a personal level, I'm significantly older than 32, but I relate to it. I do not blame it on my football years. You know, and I played football from fifth grade through college. So I didn't play in the NFL, but, of course, to listen to all of the
naysayers and the doomsday predictors and everything else, you can't even let kids play high school football anymore because it's too dangerous with concussions and brain damage and so on and so forth, let alone college ball. I have never attributed it to anything other than just that's my personality. I just have a hard time processing things for, you know, a short-term period of time. For example, I like to say if my brain was a computer, it would be diagnosed as having poor facial recognition software. I see people's faces, and I know where they're from, and then 10 minutes later, if I see them again, I'm going to look at them and say, who are you again? I don't remember that. Now, that's just some people have different, and I think perhaps it has gotten a little bit worse since I've gotten older, to be quite honest with you, and that's a little bit about what Joe Thomas is talking about here. Well, let's circle it back around now, and let me give you some more quotes from Joe Thomas to the football aspect. He's entering his 11th season. He's never missed a snap. He was the third overall pick in 2007's draft. That's hard to believe. Never missed a snap. And he said he's well aware of the risks of playing in terms of long-term brain damage, and he says he's fine with it. These are risks he's willing to accept. Quote, there's definitely a concern. But the way I look at it is just about every profession in our society, there are some lasting effects. It's just the way that our society is set up. People have to work. If I was a stonemason, or if I was a painter, or building bridges, or whatever, there's going to be some wear and tear on your body and your brain, and that's just the way that it is. End quote. You know, I've always been a Joe Thomas fan. Not just of his performance and being a Pro Bowler virtually every year he's been in the league, but his mentality, his approach, his philosophy, his attitude. I've always, but this gives me a brand new respect for him. I have long said that anybody that takes a job working construction on high rises, for example, knows the danger that they're getting into. They know full well that one misstep on a beam 35 stories overhead is death. They know it. Anybody that decides to go down to Southern Ohio or into West Virginia and work in a coal mine, they know full well that if the wrong timber gives, we got a collapsed mine and you could be in your grave. And you have to deal with the threat potentially of black lung disease. Everybody that works, and I'm just trying to think of some other day. If you work on a highway crew, now we don't see it every day, but we've seen it often enough. That headline that a highway construction worker was hit by a passing car that wasn't paying attention or got too close or slipped or whatever and was hit and killed in traffic. There are very seriously dangerous jobs. My father is a prime example. My father was a roofer by trade. God rest his soul, he died in 1996. It's hard to believe it's been 21 years. He was a roofer by trade. His legs were destroyed when he fell off a roof in a windstorm. And his legs were destroyed. One of them was shattered in about, I don't know, I mean, his leg was like a maraca. I was a year old. I just know the story and the pictures. The other one was severed, hanging on by a couple of ligaments, somehow miraculously, way back in 1969 or so. Some doctor was able to save both legs, but he had circulation problems. He could never walk right again, etc. It was a long-lasting impact on him from his career. So to back to the current story, Joe Thomas is saying, do I have some memory loss? Yeah. Is it because of football? I don't know. Maybe. But even if it is, I know what to expect going in. I'm going to slam into people for the next 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 years, however long my career lasts, and it could very well affect me. But any job I take is going to affect me and have a long-term impact on me in some way. If I'm working with my body, the way my father did as a roofer, or you can go ahead and pick any of those other careers or professions that I just talked about. It's going to be very difficult on your body or on your mind or whatever the case might be, but we have to work. Thomas went on to say, to be able to live the lifestyle and provide for my family the way that football has been able to do, to me it's a trade-off I am willing to accept. He did mention other long-term issues that have been linked to brain trauma. He said, quote, you look at guys with significant Alzheimer's and dementia and the mood swings and suicides that unfortunately NFL players have been faced with, he said, and depression, Lou Gehrig's disease. He said there are all things that have been kind of linked to brain damage from football. These are obviously very scary and frightening things, but I, from my perspective, I can't do anything about it. This was the profession that I have already chosen. There is the key word for all of those trying to shut down football and scare people away from the game, etc. Kids, moms, this is what I have chosen. And most of the damage has probably been done already anyway. So what are the things that I can do to try to minimize my chances of having those negative effects down the line and then do everything else I possibly can? Then I can't worry about it. I have to accept it. But I do hope that the medicine continues to improve, and in 10 years maybe we'll be able to fix my body better than they did for the poor guys who were crippled from playing in the NFL in the 60s and the 70s. I just think it's a fantastic point of view expressed by Joe Thomas with all of those stories about how football is evil, football is dangerous, don't go into the NFL. It's a, you're signing your death warrant, it's going to kill your brain, et cetera, et cetera. Joe Thomas says, you know what? There are a lot of jobs that can really cause destructive futures for you, for your body, for your mind, et cetera, et cetera. But this is what we choose, and we choose, and it's what I chose, and I knew going in, and everybody going into one of those professions. You know, I can't believe I didn't mention police officer, especially with how police officers are maligned so much in society today. Every one of them that puts on that bulletproof vest and goes out there on the job knows full well they may not come home again to kiss their, you know, they kiss their children and their wives or their spouses goodbye, and then they go out on the job. They may not come back. I'm pretty safe, assuming I'm coming back from a radio show. You may be safe coming back from your business office. You may be safe coming back from the factory, the plant you're working at. You may feel pretty safe that, yeah, I got a pretty good 99.999% chance of coming home today. Cops don't. So many of those other professions that I was just talking about, they don't have as quite as good of a chance. But you chose that profession anyway, and that's what you do for a living. So I just wanted to kind of square that in. All of that, of course, is with the NFL draft tomorrow night as the backdrop. First round, again, coverage begins at 7 o'clock. We're going to have it right here for you on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. And before I do anything else, and I do want to remind you of a couple of things. I feel like I should probably address the giant elephant in the room every time I say the words ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. You know, we are an ESPN radio affiliate, and ESPN had a very, very dark day today. It's not the first one. It's just the most public one because some of the talent that was laid off was exactly that. It was talent, on-air personalities that you have come to know. But there are a whole bunch of changes at ESPN today. They dumped a ton of people behind the scenes a little over a year ago, because of financial woes and loss of subscribers. And in my opinion, ESPN is going to have to rethink its whole business model and its whole on-air presentation and plan. And some of the decisions they made today are just awful. There are people with families who have lost their jobs now. They're going to have to try to pick up, relocate. It's the nature of the business in this business. I've been fired. I know what it's like. Almost everybody has. Every successful radio and television personality ever has been fired. Rush Limbaugh's been fired. Howard Stern's been fired. And guess what? Some other guys today have been fired or laid off because of their budget problems at ESPN. I just want to say this, and we'll let it go at that. My thoughts are with the families of those who just got that news today, including some names you know, like Jason Stark, one of the great baseball writers of our time, Ed Werder, NFL reporter, Danny Cannell, who is part of the Russillo and Cannell show that precedes this one on the radio every day. There are a bunch of names, some 70 to 100 people who are on-air personalities in some way, shape, or form are given their pink slips today. So I want to say my thoughts and all of our thoughts should be with them. Because it is certainly not their fault that ESPN's corporate decisions have been made like this. It'll be difficult. It'll be difficult. Let's just put it to you that way. It'll be difficult to see how they move forward from here. Here at ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, I can tell you it'll be business as usual. We're going to continue to do our thing because we're not an O&O. That means we're not owned and operated by ESPN. We are a different company, and we are very, very happy that you're with us and very glad that you like our programming. But just understand there's some things going on and there's some things being said, and there's some decisions, quite frankly, that have been made at the parent company of ESPN, which is owned by ABC, which is owned by Disney, that I have a problem with, that I think they may have made some of these issues worse than what they are. But for now, I just want to say to all the personalities who lost their gigs, it's the nature of the beast in our business. So many of us have been through it before, and our thoughts are with you. All right, with that, I want to remind you about something much happier, like going to play golf on an 80-degree day like we had today. How would you like to play all the time at the only all-inclusive private country club in Northwest Ohio? You know, people are always taking all-inclusive vacations to save money. Well, Brandywine, you're on a constant all-inclusive vacation. It's unlimited golf, cart, pool, fitness, and all the social events, including the amazing pool parties at Brandywine. It's brand new, new ownership, new layout of the golf course. They're changing the way traditional clubs compete. It's so refreshing to play at a place like this. The new course, by the way, the layout, is simply spectacular. It's 18 holes of Arthur Hills Championship Golf. It's a par 72. There's three par fives on the front nine, so some big bombs are going to be let loose there. Total yardage of 6639, which is a great challenge for great golfers if you want to play from the tips. Fun and playable from the whites for the rest of us, too. It's just a great place to play the game. And you know what? It's one of the greatest things about it is you can get on when you want to get on. You don't have to wait behind the leagues at Brandywine because there is only one league at Brandywine. That league, of course, is yours as a member. That's the beauty of a private, all-inclusive country club. And by the way, it's not just the golf course that you want to think about when you are at Brandywine. You got to take advantage of the tremendous restaurant. It's so popular. It opened last summer, and everybody loves it. It's now open to the public, and that is Champions. The bar and grill there at Brandywine is amazing, delicious menu options, great atmosphere as well, keeps guests and members keep coming back and wanting more and more and more. Check out the steaks. I'm a steak lover, I just got to tell you, and the finest marbled hand-selected certified Angus beef that they have there, expertly aged a minimum of 21 days, you got to check it out for yourself. Here's what you do. Call 419-865-2393, all right? 419-865-2393 to get all the details about becoming a member at the all-new, all-inclusive Brandywine Country Club. And then if you join by May 31st, they will waive the initiation fee. How does that sound? They will waive the initiation fee if you join by May 31st. Call them up at 419-865-2393 and get all the details. Tell them that ESPN 106.5 The Ticket sent you, and they're going to take great care of you at Brandywine. Okay, here's what we got coming up. First of all, congratulations to Kent Berger of Perrysburg and Jay Hansen of Lambertville. They're going to the Walleye playoff game. I've got Mud Hens tickets. Excuse me, in between coughs. I've got Mud Hens and Louisville tickets for Friday, May 5th. I'm going to give you a pair of those if you are caller number 6 and another pair if you are caller number 7. So two pairs, one to caller 6 and one to caller number 7 at 866-240-1065. And on the other side of this timeout, we are going to talk NFL draft. Ari Noko will join us. He's going to be hosting ESPN Radio's draft coverage starting tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. You'll hear it right here on The Ticket. So that conversation with Ari Noko and Jim Cushlin is coming up next right here on The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back into the Extravaganza here on this Wednesday. Jim Cushlin hanging out with you now. We're talking, obviously, a lot of NFL draft stuff, as, of course, the first round of the draft tomorrow, rounds 2 and 3, coming up on Friday, the remainder over the weekend. So we're obviously going to be talking a ton of draft with a ton of people over the next couple days. We're going to get it started right now with some outstanding draft talk. You can hear this, gentlemen, every Saturday, 10 to noon here on The Ticket. The show goes 8 to 12. We, of course, have Great Lakes Golf today from 8 to 10, co-hosting Dari and Mel. He's also the host of SEC Now on the SEC Network. And most importantly, for our purposes, hosting the draft coverage, which you'll hear on The Ticket tomorrow, 7 o'clock, Friday at 6:30, along with Bill Polian, Chris Canty, John Clayton. Follow him on Twitter, by the by, at ESPN Dari. Dari Noka taking some time talking draft with us today. How you doing?
Well, I'm good. I'm enjoying my last day here at home in Charlotte before heading to Philly nice and early in the morning, so it'll be fun.
Yeah, this is always such a fun time of year, and with all the various picks and rumors and everything that all leads up to, it's always a fun time. But let's start with right at the top where everyone's been started, because it hasn't been that much fun for some of our fans here in Toledo. Of course, we have a lot of Lions fans with the Lions affiliate, but we also have a ton of Browns fans, too. They've been on the clock, seemingly since October of last year, and all sorts of rumors out there of what may go down. Even as of today, it still sounds like they're deciding between, at least for that number one spot, not to mention the 12th, between Myles Garrett or Mitch Trubisky. What's the latest you're hearing on what the Cleveland Browns may be doing as they're on the clock for tomorrow night?
Yeah, Jim, I would expect that we aren't going to know anything for certain until it's their turn to pick. You know, I've talked to so many people who think that Myles Garrett's a phenomenal player. Is he a lock at number one? I don't know. There are weaknesses there. And I think that anybody picking at one might at least have that desire to see where there is that they might be able to move down if that's the case. Now, not everybody has the needs that Cleveland has. We're at a quarterback spot. You know, they have the opportunity to take, I would say, two guys. Quite frankly, they could take whoever they want. I only think two of them, in my own personal opinion, and maybe Patrick Mahomes on the outside, have that real NFL potential. But quite frankly, nobody's walking in there and is going to be any better than anybody, including Brock Osweiler, that they have on that roster now. So you're not looking at a fix at quarterback next season. You're looking, though, at a potential playmaker next season in defensive end if you go Myles Garrett. My hunch is they're probably going to go Garrett, and then let's see if they can trade up from 12. Then you maybe make a play for a Trubisky or a Deshaun Watson if they decide Watson is the quarterback they want.
And that's kind of what I've been hearing a lot, too, which you sort of answered my follow-up question, but I'll still ask it anyway. What's the likelihood that the Browns are going to have to trade up from that second spot that they have at number 12? How probable do you think that is, that it's going to have to happen, that somebody like Trubisky won't just fall to them at 12?
Yeah, I don't think it will. I don't think there's any way they will. Now, you never trust the Jets when it comes to quarterbacks, right? So the Jets are picking at 6. Do they need to draft a quarterback? You know, this is a make-or-break season for Todd Bowles. This is a season, though, where, quite frankly, a good year for the Jets is probably going to put them at around 4-12, maybe 5-11. A rookie quarterback isn't going to step in and start this year. I think that's a team that may say, you know what, we could slide down. We have other needs as well. We do have Christian Hackenberg on that roster. Let's see if we want to finally give him an opportunity to play. So I do think at 6 is probably a good chance for them to move down. You look at where else quarterbacks may go. Look, if they say that Trubisky is their guy and they feel the Jets, that would be who the Jets would go with, then you've got to move up and get him. If they like Watson, potentially, and they're not hearing much that there's a lot of interest in Watson 1-11, they don't have to move. I think it comes down ultimately to which quarterback they like better. I hear Trubisky's name a lot more than I hear Watson's name associated with the Browns, although I might personally go the other direction on that, but I'm not picking for the Browns, and we will see. But I just ultimately think it comes down to, and maybe that Jets are the team that is the biggest threat to take a quarterback. The Browns have stockpiled picks. They're in a good position. They could trade up to 6 after taking one and be just fine when it comes to still continuing to build that franchise, which is a process they've been doing for 15 years now.
Talking with Dari Doka. He is the co-host of Dari and Bell, which you can hear Saturday mornings here on The Ticket. Most importantly, you'll hear him a whole bunch tomorrow and Friday for draft coverage here on The Ticket, ESPN Radio, 7 tomorrow, 6:30 on Friday. It's going to be a whole bunch of fun. And, you know, for a team in the Browns, and it's been well documented by anybody with a brain, a team that needs everything. I keep coming back, and I was just having a conversation earlier today, to be honest with you, Daria, with Browns, a friend of mine who's a Browns fan, still thinking, should they really do this, or should they, you know, trade down, maybe take something later? And I said, no, you still have to, at some point, take a high draft pick quarterback. You can't be trading back and getting the Johnny Manziel types of the world. That idea clearly hasn't worked over the years, but with so many picks and so many needs, how imperative is it for the Browns to make sure they get a quarterback with, worst case scenario, one of their first three picks, the third being the first pick in round two?
Well, I do think it's imperative. And the one trouble is with these three quarterbacks is I don't know that none of them are guaranteed. None of them. You know, you go from the end of the regular season through combines and pro days, and all of a sudden Patrick Mahomes is a really hot name. Is he going to go ahead of Deshaun Watson, who has won a national championship and played his you-know-what off against Alabama in the game where they lost a national championship? And quite frankly, we know this, that Watson, if the Heisman voting had come after the playoff instead of before it, it's a landslide over Lamar Jackson. He's going to be the guy. He's phenomenal. He's been great in big moments, although at times, since the first half of the season, he did struggle a little bit with decision-making. My point is, and Trubisky started, what, 13 games in his career?
Right.
My point is this. You've got a system guy in Mahomes. You have to be concerned a little bit about that. The history of Texas Tech quarterbacks to have success, or Mike Leach type of offense quarterbacks, and I think we'll be saying this about Luke Falk next year at Washington State, it's limited. It's, quite frankly, it's zero. So that's a concern. It has to be at least a little bit more. Trubisky, very little starting experience, relatively speaking. That's a concern. And then Watson, I think he's got clearly more experience than anybody else, but, you know, he's a little bit up and down, but he finished his career very, very up. There's not a home run pick. You're going to be killing yourself on this if you pick one and you leave the other two, and then one of the other two blows up, especially if you're the Browns, Jim, and you've got the history of always seeming to take the wrong guy. I don't envy them. I don't want to be them. I think you take a defensive end, probably a likelier shot of success in that route with number one. You want one of these quarterbacks. I think you need to prove. I think you need to take one of these quarterbacks. But, my gosh, man, I think I'd take Watson, but it's not clear cut. You feel like you're taking him too high at six, but you need to get one anyhow. It's not an envious position to be in. I guess this is why these guys make a lot of money. I don't know.
That'd be my guess, too. And, yeah, I'm with you on that. It's not an envious position for us Browns fans, that's for sure. I think the only positive, at least I could think of right now, is they do have so many assets, so they can make various moves if necessary.
Hang on. Let me ask you this thing. You say us Browns fans. All right, Jim, you're a Browns fan.
Yeah.
What do you want them to do? You tell me, what's the perfect scenario for the first round tomorrow night?
To me, whether it's 1 or 12, a quarterback must be taken there. I'm so sick of, honestly, Dari, seeing this team trade down. You know, you get your mid-level quarterbacks, your Johnny Manziels, your Charlie Fries. There's one for you, Browns fans. They haven't, basically what I want to see them do, whether it's Trubisky, Deshaun Watson, Kaiser, almost doesn't matter. Go with one of them, stick them in there, and if 3 years from now they fail, okay, that's fine. You hadn't really tried that route. The Browns franchise has not really tried that route since they drafted Tim Couch, and that was 1999, almost 20 years ago now. Clearly what they're doing right now is not working. You got to put your eggs in one basket and just roll with it. That's where I seem to fall down on this.
Yeah, I just don't think any of these guys are the type of quarterback that is ready to start. But you know what? I don't know that Carson Wentz was either, and we saw at least the first half of last season he was excellent for Philadelphia. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe one of them is. But if one of them is going to go into that city and start right away, two things. One, I want a guy that's got a lot of experience. Two, I want a guy that's got a lot of mobility. All right.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at Deshaun Watson as being really the one that fits those two characteristics the best.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. And if Browns fans are worried that guy might fail, I keep referencing, when these conversations and they have come up, I keep referencing Peyton Manning was 3-13 in his rookie season. We're talking with Dari Nowak. He's going to host the draft coverage, which you'll hear on the Ticket from ESPN Radio tomorrow. First round coverage at 7, 6:30 on the Friday coverage for the second and the third rounds. Let's shift to the other team here in our area in Toledo, the Detroit Lions. They check in at number 21. From all accounts, all the Lions people that I've been talking to over recent weeks say, yeah, linebacker is definitely their biggest need, but whatever it is, it's on the front seven defensive side of the ball. Is that what you see them doing at 21?
No question. Absolutely no question about that. Offensively, they're fine. Did they struggle to run the ball a little bit? Yes. You get Amir Abdullah healthy, you've got a lot to build around there. I don't think offense is any concern when it comes to round number one for Detroit. I think at 21, they're still going to be in the market for a good defensive player, whether it's a Charles Harris or a Tack McKinley, who Mel Kiper and Todd McShay have relatively or respectively in their latest mock drafts. You could get Jared Davis, a linebacker out of Florida. There's going to be a lot of talent, front seven talent, that Detroit has to choose from at 21. I think taking anybody on the offensive side of the football that early would be a big mistake, because keep in mind, this isn't a really top-heavy draft when it comes to absolute game-changers and game-breakers in the first 15 picks. But what it is about 3 to 4 rounds deep, very, very deep. And that's a good thing for a team like Detroit. They don't have any screaming needs, quite frankly. Defense could use a boost. You can get a really good player at 21. You can get another really good player in the second round if you're Detroit. So I think that's where you start, 21, 53, 85. I think you go that deep, you can find a couple of good football players that are ready to step in defensively.
Oh, no question, especially on the defensive side of the ball. That's clearly where this draft is at its deepest, as you point out.
Yeah.
On the Lions, with one thing, though, that I've been thinking about, and we first started talking about this around combine time a month and a half ago, and that's Joe Mixon. Obviously, he has his story that goes along with all of that, and it's likely to see him fall in some of the draft, but I remember from the pro day, because we talked about it on our show here, that the Detroit Lions were one of the few teams on Mixon's pro day that actually had a private meeting with him. If it's a second or third round thing, baggage aside, this is a team that if there's one offensive need they have nobody to run the ball. If it's a second or third round kind of pick, do you think the Lions should possibly take a stab at Joe Mixon, baggage and all?
Yeah, he's hard to talk about, quite frankly, and I've had to do it a lot. I'm an Oklahoma grad, and a lot of people that I talk to want to ask me about him, and you know, it's hard to forgive what he did, quite frankly. It's a PR nightmare for whatever team takes him. And, you know, I don't think anybody's going to take him particularly high. But when I say particularly high, I'm talking top 20, 25. I think he's a late first-round guy. I think if Joe Mixon, like if you're Detroit, you're picking second round or I can't imagine Mixon being around for the third, especially late in the third. But that, say you're picking there and you're really contemplating Joe Mixon, I think at that point, as long as you can justify with your fan base, look, we didn't spend the 21st pick in the draft on it. Okay, I think that's a risk. I think that's a PR nightmare, especially at Detroit, who doesn't need an offensive player, quite frankly. You get him in the second round, I think you can probably sell that to your fans a little bit. I think talent-wise, he's phenomenal. So now you're just simply saying, one, can I justify this with my fan base and my ticket holders? Two, will he fit okay with a veteran football team, which Detroit, for the most part, has offensively, and that's a good thing. Three, you know, is he a different person? I tend to think and lean towards, yeah, he maybe is, but this is going to still be a very difficult sell. You get him in the third round. You don't feel like you've spent a high pick. You don't feel like you've mortgaged anything you should mortgage on him. Great. But I don't think he's going to. It takes 3% of NFL teams to determine that Joe Mixon's a first-round pick. 3%. One. It only takes one. I think he's going late first round tomorrow. I don't know who. But he's too good of a football player for a team to look at him and say, you know what, this happened 3 years ago, I'm going to hold it against him forever. Now, you can if you want. I just think in this business, you're going to see a player who can return punts and kicks, who can catch the football out of the backfield as well as any back in the league, who's got game-breaking speed and is a home run threat. All right, I'm not saying I would do it. I just think somebody will.
We're talking with Dari Doka. He is a co-host of Dari and Bell Saturday mornings here on ESPN Radio on the Ticket. Also, of course, hosting the draft coverage tomorrow night at 7, Friday night at 6:30. One last quick question before I let you go. And thanks so much, by the way, for the time and the insight. It's been awesome.
Sure.
There's always things that happen over the course of draft, whether it be a trade nobody expected or a pick nobody expected. Name one thing that nobody's thinking could happen that could happen tomorrow.
No, I'll give you two.
Okay.
And I'm not even saying I think they're going to happen. But I think that you have the possibility. One, let's go to Joe Mixon. I just sat here and said I think he's late first-round pick. Would I be stunned if somebody took him in the top 20? A little bit, but it's not out of the question. NFL teams need playmakers. So just keep an eye on that. I don't think it's going to happen, but it would not shock me to death if it did. The other one is, keep an eye on Patrick Mahomes. A lot of people, everybody's saying Trubisky or Watson, Watson or Trubisky. There are NFL teams that absolutely love him, and they can separate him from the typical air raid type of Cliff Kingsbury, Texas Tech, Mike Leach type of offenses. They can separate him because they see spectacular accuracy and arm strength. Pat Mahomes may not be the third quarterback to go. He may be the second quarterback to go. And if Cleveland passes on a trade down, or a trade up, I should say, I wouldn't be overly surprised if he falls to the right team, maybe as the first quarterback. But I think Mahomes could be the second guy to go, and let's just watch Mixon, because I think by the end of tomorrow night, there's a chance that he will be the story of the draft. And I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just saying it's a thing.
One of the funnest times on the sports calendar is just over 24 hours away. Round one of the NFL draft. We'll have the coverage of it for you starting at 7 tomorrow night. Then on Friday night for rounds 2 and 3, 6:30 coverage. And that man you just heard, Dari Doka, will be hosting all the festivities for that. And you can also catch him as co-host of Dari and Bell Saturday mornings here on the Ticket. Thanks so much for taking the time for the insight. Enjoy the draft the next couple days. And thanks so much for the time today.
You got it. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem. That is Dari Doka, host of the NFL draft coverage here on the Ticket ESPN Radio. 7 o'clock for the first round coverage begins tomorrow night. Then 6:30 for rounds 2 and 3 coming up on Friday. It's going to be very, very interesting. Obviously, we're talking a ton about it these next couple days. A lot of the attention, and we're not trying to be a Cleveland bias on this one, but they have the first round draft pick, and they're the Browns with how they screw up drafts so very often. I like Dari. I expect the Lions to take somebody on the defensive side of the ball, probably at linebacker. If they do, I'll call that at least a B, if not better, right off the bat for that kind of thing. But it's going to be a very interesting draft, and it's all going to get underway. 7 o'clock, the coverage begins tomorrow night. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out with us here on this Wednesday edition. A lot of draft talk coming up tomorrow. Justin Rogers from the Lions' point of view. Scott Petrak from the Browns' point of view as we lead up to it. But don't go go anywhere. The doubleheader with Mike Miller coming up next. First Drive Time, then Face Off the Hockey Show. It is Wednesday. And the playoffs, by the way, in the NHL restart the second round. First games starting up tonight. So, Mike, I'm sure we'll be talking a ton about that. Drive Time and Face Off the Hockey Show coming at you next. More draft coverage when we reconvene tomorrow. And we'll just be hours away from the Browns officially having that clock get started. So it's going to be a fun time, and we're going to be here to talk about it with all of you over the next couple days. Mike Miller with Drive Time, Face Off the Hockey Show, coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.